This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
In about an hour, let's make it 1 hour, we're going to announce the 2016 Walk of Fame class. The new plaques on the sidewalk. And guess who's going to be here with us, Mary?
Who? I don't know.
Dave Ennett, he's on the Walk of Fame.
Yes. Is it clean today?
Dave goes out there every morning with a toothbrush and he scrubs his plaque. Yes, yeah. I do.
No, there's a lady who walks across the courtyard, not every morning, maybe every other, and she's very sweet. She's on her way, presumably, to Equitable or NBC Tower. She's crossing the courtyard.
And she keeps the pigeons from pooping on his plaque?
Yes. She takes little breadcrumbs or little pieces of bread and kind of spreads them all along the walk, but never on the plaques. She's very respectful of the plaques.
That's nice. We're going to have Spike Odell join us as well, Dave, so you and Spike can analyze the new class.
Good. I guess we're
going to haze them?
There's no official hazing that's not allowed anymore. It's
so
frowned upon.
So you say. But that'll be in an hour. Have you seen the list yet?
Yes, I have.
And do you approve?
I approve 110%.
Okay. It's a great list.
It is
a really
pretty
good list. Yeah.
Really good.
6:12 in the morning now, and before we actually crank up the show, I want to remind you again, and you guys tell me when we're getting some texts in, because there's got to be women who are ready to complain about the men in their lives. Here's the way this works, I would assume, because I've never been in this experience where you don't do something you're asked to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a woman in your life asks you to do something. Hey, you know the thing I asked you to fix like 12 years ago? If we can't get it fixed, remember you said when you were trying to get me naked, you said you knew what you were doing? since you don't, could we call somebody? No, I got it. And then you make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
He made it worse.
But have you ever done that? Has your wife said, hey, you need to fix this, and you put a big hole in the wall? Or
which wife are we talking about? First seven?
Yeah, one of the first seven.
You know, I don't think I have such limited skill in that area. I can't remember making anything worse.
And Tyra probably wouldn't ask you to do a lot anyway, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, Tyra with the tools. Unbelievable.
I bet.
Not even plumbing. Plumbing's always...
Well,
what do you mean, like a plunger? Of course,
yes.
Everybody does that.
Well, fixing your faucet or anything.
No.
That's always hard work.
Fixing the faucet, that's funny.
I actually need my faucet fixed.
You should call a plumber. 312-981-7200 is the number, so send those texts in and we'll get those texts on. This all started from a conversation with Sandberg, the new AP for the show here, because the man she lives with woke her up at like midnight storming into the bedroom. And they have a pocket door, apparently, in their master bedroom that squeaked.
Uh-huh.
And she apparently does most of the Mr. Fix-It stuff around the house. And he said at midnight, when she's getting up in like an hour, we do something about this door.
Yeah, that's sort of an easy fix. So it's probably just WD-40.
She rebuilt the house.
She did, yeah.
Yeah,
she can
rebuilt
do that
the
like
house.
That.
Yeah, she, it's like a MacGyver thing there.
And at midnight, too. And then was it work on time?
Maybe missing a key point to that story. I'm not sure. I'll ask her to retell it here in a few minutes. We'll get some of these texts on as well. At 6:14, news from yesterday. Donald Trump called his son, Eric, his douchiest son. First off, I didn't know there was a contest. And secondarily, in the same tweet, he referred to Ivanka as his favorite. Wink, wink.
Got it.
This is all related to a tweet that Eric Trump sent out with a picture of the Sopranos saying, when Ted Cruz gets to New York, we'll send a car.
Oh, wink,
now,
wink.
People on, you know, there are critics and then there are twittics. Twittics are people on Twitter who are critics of people who just wait for you to say something they can criticize.
They just troll the internet. They troll Twitter.
Yeah. And they were all over Eric Trump saying things like the Sopranos are from New Jersey. Okay, I don't think this is really the number one thing we can attack the Trump family over, but it is odd that Donald Trump is so unaware of his unpopularity that he would throw the word douchey out in regards to his son on Twitter.
And rate your kids? I don't have kids. You all have more than one. Would you ever rate?
Oh, sure. I like Amy
better.
Ever since Ross left, yeah.
But rating, even rating your kids, that's just uncool.
And Dave, you like your daughter better. I mean, come on, please.
Well, we do rankings every week.
Yeah, so they can change.
I have a panel, and everybody casts their votes by Sunday night at 11 o'clock.
And your daughter could be up. Your son could be up.
Yeah.
Maybe 1 week they're both up. Your daughter's been on quite a string, I know, of number one weeks.
She's been around longer, so she's got that going for her.
Yeah, that's true. Oh,
I do mine every day.
Yeah. Who's your number one today?
I haven't decided yet. Nobody has texted me yet. We'll see.
This is check in with mom if you want to be ranked number one.
This is frightening to me that you guys rank your kids.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
You got to.
Yeah.
Got
to
have favorites every day, different ones.
Without a doubt. At 616, and Abigail's my favorite grandchild.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen her? Have I shown you any pictures?
Oh, the cheeks on that kid?
And the eyes on that kid.
Changes every day.
Eyes on that kid are unbelievable.
She's a cute kid, I got to say.
Thinking about using her in bank robberies.
For as often as you talk about that kid, she is a QT.
Just walking in with her in bank robberies, trying to tell her to look at her. Hypnotized. Now give me your money. I'm not robbing banks. What do you think I am, douchey? It's 617. Let's get traffic first. Mary's here with your traffic trouble spots, and then we'll come back and get you some of these texts and have Mary fill in the holes on the story that I told about her fixing her house and rebuilding it. By the way, we have two Marys on the show now. That's why I call her Sandberg. Mary Sandberg. Sandberg's her last name. So I call her Sandberg. Call you Mary because you have squatter rights on the Mary thing.
Right.
Okay.
Got it.
Now we're cool. Texter from 312. I bet Ian Punnett's finally getting his place on the Walk of Fame, right? Actually, no. No, he won't be. Were you working here when Ian Punnett
was here? Like the only guy I have not worked with at this radio station.
Okay.
Never had the pleasure.
And I don't know Ian Punnett.
I don't either.
You know, I'm sure he's a fine guy.
Yeah.
But no, he's not in this class. 710 Spike joins Dave, and we announce the Walk of Fame class for 2016. Sandberg's here, the producer of the show. And so can we reveal who this guy is that you you are involved with?
We can.
What's his name?
Pat Boyle.
Pat Boyle from Comcast Sportsnet?
Yes, that Pat Boyle.
I like him.
I like him, too. He's a good guy.
Pat does a good job.
Yes.
I've played golf with him many times. We're friends. We hang out all the time.
Who's the better golfer?
It depends. He's a good player.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a good player. We usually hang out on the weekends. We like to take long walks in the park.
Okay, that just got weird.
I do a little window shopping.
Well, I think you guys are going to go start seeing movies together, aren't you?
Yeah, with the safety seat between us. Yeah. All right, so you're the fix-it person at your house?
I am. I like to call myself the household manager, and repairs falls under that title.
Okay.
And so the particular incident you're referring to was a Sunday evening. I had gone to bed.
What time do you get up?
3:15. Sometimes if I'm generous with myself, I'll give myself 3:25 if I'm going to wear my hair curly, you know.
Same here. So at 3:15, the alarm goes off, which means at midnight, you probably don't want to be woken up.
No. And so it was actually more probably around 11:30, but I was laying in bed, and I'm a light sleeper, so Pat had come in the room, so I was awake. But the pocket door to the master bathroom was making a kind of a squeaky drag noise, and it had been for a few weeks.
And he says loudly enough for you to hear.
He comes out from brushing his teeth. Can we do something about this door? And
I every time I hear the story, I'm amazed you didn't kill him.
I like the we part. Can we do something?
I know.
About
and
the
I
door?
Was thinking, yeah, any morning you get up, you could go ahead and grab that WD-40 and take care of this. So I was annoyed and I got out of bed. I went to the laundry room, got the WD-40, sprayed it up, wiped all the drippings off, you know, and problem solved. And the frustrating thing was he wasn't like, oh, you're the best, whatever. Finally, that's what he said. Finally.
Oh,
finally.
What every woman loves to hear.
Man, then how did you fall asleep after that? I'd be
you
so
know, Mayor,
mad.
That's a good question.
Yeah, because that's when you do the female flop, the flop and sigh.
Yeah.
It's the flop and sigh. You roll over and sigh, then you roll back over and sigh.
Right.
What's
Where
wrong?
I keep saying, you're breathing heavy.
What's wrong? What's wrong? Nothing.
I just so what'd you do to him when 3:30 in the morning?
Have you seen him on CSN
him?
Lately?
Get him
They'll
back.
Never find that body. Did you have a fight about it the next day?
We did not. No,
you're just putting it on the mental checklist.
Yeah, it's there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. By the way, a texter just from the 262 area code. Fred Hoiberg made it worse. Okay, I don't think you understand what we're talking about
No.
here. What we're talking about here is actually household projects. And it's 6:25. Let's get to it because it's time for Lou.
It's Lou's first call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers. We won't be comfortable until you are.
It's the time. love the show. Blues First Call.
Number to call is 312-981-7200. Let me say hi to Mr. Manfredini. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir.
So you understand what we're saying here. This is your text question today under the general heading of, ugh, he made it worse.
Yeah. Can I just, two things
yeah.
as I was listening.
Yeah.
One,
yeah.
I'd really like you to do, you do an excellent Elmo impersonation.
Thank you.
It was very good. And I've met Elmo, and you're very good.
I'm Elmo-like.
Yeah.
And, small,
and I
furry, and red.
I have not met Mary Sandberg yet.
Oh, you should. She was delightful. You'd like her.
Well, I was just listening to the story. I'm not seeing this relationship going much further.
Actually, they're just fine.
Finally?
They're just fine.
The word was finally?
Yeah, that's the thing that amazed me. Yeah. And for somebody who's been on the married situation a long time, mm-hmm. You understand the danger of that move. Mm-hmm. I mean, good God.
I'm going on 26 years. You know why?
Because you would never say finally.
And I do what she says.
Yeah.
Lou always, my favorite expression of Lou's, right?
Happy wife. Happy life.
Yeah.
I got to tell you.
As my wife always says, she's never known me happier.
That's right. People come up to me when we're shooting, and they're like, hey, tell Lou, happy wife, happy life.
The thing is, Lou, and you know this because you've also shared in the sociological project, I've lived among their people.
I know.
I have spent time in their culture.
Yes, I know.
And I have learned their language. And you must understand and respect their culture
right.
before you can become indoctrinated
Absolutely.
Within it.
Knowledge is power.
Yeah. And I like Pat. I like Pat a lot, but clearly we got to get him a skirt.
Yeah, we do. Well, yeah. Or a can of WD-40.
Yeah.
His own can.
That's a great gift. Can you get like a jumbo can?
Oh,
like some sort of distributor can?
I can get him a can that you can ride like a pony. You can be like, come on, Mary, get on the back.
Is it line two? Is that our first caller? Let me know when we're ready for our first caller. Line two, is that a yes or is that a tentative? Not anymore. It's not. We're looking for the first caller for Lou at 312-981-7200. All right, so here's the weirdness of this weather. Mm-hmm. Just when you thought you could get outside and do stuff, you get this cold snap. Does that change our schedule?
It does. You know, I was just in our store. I was in New York for a few days filming House Smarts and just got back. And we've got a lot of customers coming into the stores going, I want to put my grass seed down. And the soil temperature is just not warm enough. And if you put grass seed down now, all you're going to be doing is feeding the birds because they're going to see the grass seed and they're going to eat it. And so while everybody wants to get out there right now, it's been such a weird weather pattern that – you really want to do it when the timing is right. Now, one thing I'll tell you is most stores, both the big boxes and the hardware stores as well, they all have these great deals on all the fertilizing products right now, really good deals. And so most people with their lawns will get into these four-step programs, and right now you can buy that really well. You know, like all four bags for $60 or $70, depending on the size of the bags you buy.
Okay.
But if you wait and you say, well, all I need is step one, you know, because it's the spring. I don't want two, three, and four. Okay, that's fine. But when the sale is over, then all those bags cost $25 a piece. And so now that $60 that you spent turns into $100.
Which is dumb.
Right. We don't even have to talk to Orion about that. We know that that's not a good business decision.
Right.
Correct. So if you're on the fence about it, going, no, I don't want to spend the $60. Trust me, you're going to save yourself $40.
Yeah, so buy it and
put it in
the
garage. It's not going to go bad.
And put it out when?
Well, so we need the soil temperature to be above 50 degrees. Right now, if you want to get out there and do something, grab a pair of gloves, grab a rake, clean the lawn up a little bit, get rid of the thatch. If you want to rent a core aerator, you can do that now to prep the lawn. But really, about the only thing you can put down is some organic material, say, like my favorite, which is Milorganite, which is just an all-organic product. And you can do that now because that'll just slowly get absorbed into the soil. But we're probably, I mean, I can't even tell you, Steve, because the weather has been crazy. But if we can finally get into the 50s and 60s.
5 or 6 days in a row.
About, correct, exactly.
Right,
then you can start.
Smarter than I look. Yeah. Here's your first caller. It's another Mary. You have a question for Lou?
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my
sure.
call. Hey, I'm in a house that's about 80 years old. I need to replace a water heater, and they're suggesting to me that I replace the galvanized pipe, but they just want to replace the pipe that is exposed. So this would be just the pipe that's running, you know, along the basement ceiling joists.
Right.
And my question is, does it make any sense to only replace part of the galvanized and not go all the way up in a two-story house?
It does not. The reason is because it'll just start a snowball effect. If you've got an old home with galvanized piping, there is essentially atrophy in that pipe. And so the pressure and everything will continue to suffer. And once you replace that one section, it's going to force more volume of water to the rest of the piping that is going to then be under more stress and potentially cause leaks or even loosen up more sediment and reduce the pressure more. Now, when we're talking about replacing the risers, those are the pipes that go from the basement all the way up. That will help to increase the volume of water. There are companies out there that specialize in just replacing piping in a home. There's even an advertiser on WGN, a company called Repipe Specialists, ding the bell, that is very, you know, very proficient at doing this work. If it were me and you're going to stay in this house for the next 10 years or so, the idea behind this is you replace this piping. It's not inexpensive, okay? But when you do go to sell, it is a value-added proposition when you go to sell. Say, hey, I replaced all the piping. The you know, the water pressure is great in this house. It's 80 years old. That's a technical advantage to you, to the other homes in the neighborhood, when it comes time to sell.
And life's worth living again. And Mary, you're a big winner. You get the April Air Event-Based Thermostat brought to you by the leaders in Chicagoland's indoor comfort, American Weathermakers. Take control of your temperature in the air you breathe at AmericanWeathermakers.com. All right, lightning round. Quick answers here, Lou, from the texters. Is there a way of getting rid of creeping Charlie permanently?
You got to rip out what you can see. You have to rake like crazy, and you need to change the soil composition of your lawn by adding things like lime or a product called MagiCal by Jonathan Green.
Lou, is there a basic do-it-yourself fix-it book that you like for people that like to read about that stuff?
There's a great book that was written by a good friend of mine called House Smarts by Lou Manfredini, which is the basically the what to expect when you're expecting book for your home.
Okay, and how do we get that?
You go to Amazon.
Okay. Best way to remove mold or mildew from a white PVC fence?
There's a
new fence
cleaning product called Concrobium.
Okay.
And you spray it on, let it soak for a while, and then the best way really is to, if you could rent or buy a small pressure washer and just blast it off.
And finally, we had a texter at 847 who chimed in and the he made it worse text question of the day.
Yeah.
She says, we had a four-legged stool that needed to be cut down just a tad to fit under the counter. By the time he was done, we had a wobbly cutting board. It's very funny.
That's funny.
It's very funny. All right, we'll see you on TV, bud.
Love you.
Love you back.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own.
You are listening to Station WGN.
Coming up on 6:45, texter at the 708. The answer to your question on he made it worse is he made everything worse. My husband's the most mechanically uninclined person on the planet. He once attempted to change a window blind, ended up with it wrapped around his face and shoulders while he stumbled around the house tripping over things.
It's a Christmas card photo.
He also blew a hole through his elbow trying to change an outside light bulb. Hey, water in the fixture and aluminum siding, not a good mix.
What a visual.
He's not Mr. Fix-It, textures, 312-981-7200. He made it worse. You know, I think of Kevin, our former producer, Kevin Powell, who, of course, is in prison.
He's on the Roe show. He does sports now with Roe. He left.
Different how?
True.
Kidding, of course. Kevin's doing a great job with Roe. But I think of Kevin when I see this headline. It's Friday. Maybe you got a, you know, a new date this weekend you're excited about. Maybe you're on a dating app and you're going, well, I'm going to try this one more time. There's a new dating app that helps you find your true love based on burrito compatibility.
Oh.
Now, the website Zoosk, Z-O-O-S-K, has been around for a while, been in the matchmaking business for years. However, they have come up with new ways to put the ones and zeros together. And all the code writers who love burritos have been very busy. And they can now help you with your relationship, saying true love boils down to something you could only discover in a Taco Bell drive-thru lane. Burrito.
a dating site based on a game-changing burrito compatibility framework. The scientists who put together the analytics, they figure out all of the various things you need to figure out in regards to getting you together with your favorite person. It's burrito compatibility. You can go find your true burrito match now. You can actually go to Yelp's My Burrito Finder app, which will direct you to the nearest burrito slinger. Of course, there's other ways to hook up. There's an app that's retail Bacon Lovers Connect online as well. You know what? I'll post this article and you can trace it that way.
You know, I'm just going to go out on a limb. Shouldn't there be more to a relationship than just if you have the same burrito likings?
I would say yes, but, you know, Kevin would say no.
Yeah.
But I guess that is a relationship killer, you know, depending on how you score your relationship.
Especially after you eat the burrito as well.
Maybe because, you know, there's that politeness that goes on at first.
Yeah.
Oh, you like giant burritos where the stuff squirts out the back and ends up all over your clothes? That's so cute. That's adorable. So adorable. Look at him. Look at how hungry he is. He's so adorable. And then, of course, a month later, you think he's a fat slob. Right. You want him out of your life. So we'll post that piece, or we'll put it up on Twitter at Cochran Show and Facebook.com. Steve Cochran Show.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
When you combine legal tax avoidance with illicit tax avoidance some of the activities that we're seeing, this is not just billions of dollars. It's not even just hundreds of billions of dollars. Estimates are this may be trillions of dollars worldwide.
We mentioned with the Panama Papers that we were just getting started on this story. And when you've got 11 million pages of documents, it takes a little while to get through them all. The political fallout gets a little deeper every day. Started the other day with the Prime Minister of Ireland stepping down.
And that's Iceland.
Iceland. Yeah. I said Ireland.
Yes, Iceland. Yeah.
Well, they both start with an I. Of Iceland stepping down. Prime Minister Sigmundur Gunnlaugsson. He stepped down on Tuesday after documents revealed an offshore company owned by his wife in a tax haven that was stashing about $4 million. So, you know, look, I don't know if it's on Monster, but if you want to be the Prime Minister of Iceland, they apparently need somebody. There is this, the soccer global governing body FIFA, where ethics committee, keep in mind it's the ethics committee member Juan Pedro Damani relinquished his position on Wednesday because of more tax sheltering of cash, both personally and professionally. But the big one everybody's going to be talking about this weekend, including on the Sunday shows, is David Cameron, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, the leader of England. And we'll have Paul Coyd on Monday to give us a complete background on this if he knows who David Cameron is. But David Cameron's father was kind of a big shot attorney himself and a money manager. And David Cameron's father had an offshore account. Again, all of these set up through this Panama company. And David Cameron has admitted he profited from his father's work with these offshore accounts. So in other words, if David Cameron is admitting to tax sheltering money, well, that's not a good thing. And frankly, in the midst of what we're dealing with here, we don't need a new leader of the UK, our number one ally.
Right.
So this is not good for us either. So you need to keep an eye on this, kids. Vladimir Putin, nothing sticks to the Putin man. Pooty. Vladimir Putin's cellist, one of his closest friends, a musician named Sergei Ruldigin, had about $2 billion in tax-free funds that he was stashing away. And all of it traceable back to people close to Putin. Putin's got his hands on that, but nobody can catch him. In China, eight members of the Politburo Standing Committee, the top tier of the country's communist government, have been implicated in the Panama Papers. The company in Panama, the law firm at the center of this, is called Mossack Fonseca. Wait, Dave, isn't Mossack Fonseca a second baseman in the White Sox organization?
There was one of the Fonsecas. I think he was Al Fonseca.
Oh, you're thinking Al Fonseca.
Yes.
Al.
The
Panamanian firm has also provided a detailed response to the leak, saying that the parties in many of the circumstances are not and have never been clients of us.
Did you see some of the Hollywood celebrities now who are alleged to be involved with this?
Well, celebrities kind of a broad
term. You know what?
Term.
You're right. Yeah. I'm sorry. How about B or C-list actors? Yeah. Jackie Chan?
Jackie Chan. Well, Jackie Chan's a big deal internationally.
Right.
But Jackie Chan's
I also Jackie Chan's last good movie. Has Jackie Chan had a good movie?
I don't think so. Yeah. Not a fan. He's a nice guy, I think.
He's an entertaining little fella.
Yeah.
But question marks remain all over, including Pakistan's Nawaz Sharif, Argentinian President Mauricio Macri, all have denied the allegations of malfeasance. You know, we got the president of Ecuador coming in here next week. His name better not pop up in this list.
Oh, I hope not.
So anyway, it's a bad deal. Who leaked the documents? Very little is known. It was a German newspaper and a German reporter who got one of these Watergate-style deep throat notices. It's kind of like a direct message on Twitter. You want to see some documents? Okay.
Click here.
Yeah. Next thing you know, 11 million show up.
Were you surprised at how wide-ranging this was? How many world leaders
sure.
are alleged to be involved?
Yeah, but yeah, now I'm not, because it's the onion, right? You peel back the layers and you get more. So there will be more, but the David Cameron story is troubling to say the least. There is a second level to troubling out of England. This is why we're going to get Paul Coyd on Monday. There is an artist in England who has painted a nude Donald Trump. And the nude Donald Trump artist is now getting threats on his or her life. I don't know the artist. You know, most of my paintings involve dogs playing pool or poker. But this particular artist has painted Donald Trump in a, I would say, a traditional nude portrait position.
Like a Baroque? Or like an impressionist?
Sure. Yeah, Baroque. Yeah, any kind of Baroque you want. This Baroque, that Baroque, your Baroque, my Baroque. Something's Baroque. But in this position, he displays his, as she describes it, his micropenis.
Oh.
Yes. Which is a medical term for those of you preparing to text.
Well, he said that there's no problem there.
Yes. Yes. Well, according to the artist, there is.
Okay.
He did not sit for this. This is an artist's rendering. The painting has been banned from social media here because it's causing problems. But that's another story in England. And, you know, Paul could go and examine that for us.
The painting?
Or Trump.
Okay.
Keep in mind, the parliament took up voting whether to ban Trump from the country. So he's not a popular figure over there either. And finally, Trump's unpopularity rankings. 7 out of 10 people in this country have unfavorable views of Donald Trump.
Thank you, darling.
That's got to include his family.
Including his douchey son, as he
Eric.
Puts it.
Eric, for
as
sure,
he, as
yeah.
he puts it.
Call me names, Dad. I'm one of the 7 out of 10.
This is WGN, serving the nation from Chicago.
At WGN Radio, who we are is who we were.
Let us look at our history to find the answer.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. From the beautiful Aragon Ballroom in Chicago.
How do you do, football fans? This is Jack Brickhouse saying welcome to Chicago Bears professional football on WGN Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, radio legend Wally Phillips. Good morning, your legendship.
Oh, thank you, Your Majesty.
A radio formula, frankly, the rest of the industry today longs for. And these are the people that created it.
I love you not only for what you are.
On the Roy Leonard Show, I guess we're communicators.
But for what I am when I am with you.
This is life. They just won a World Series, but there's a ways to go. But we're there, and that's all that matters.
These great names and talent occupy a place of honor in WGN radio history.
Hillary, do you ever place a call yourself, and if someone asks who's calling, and you say Hillary Rodham Clinton, and they go, yeah right. Who is this really?
The ones I like the best are people who say, and how do you spell that?
And now they're about to be joined by a few more.
WGN Chicago.
Ladies and gentlemen, the 2016 class of the WGN Radio Walk of Fame.
Well, let's start by going backwards a little bit. Dave Anna, when were you inducted in the class?
That would have been last year.
Did you enjoy it?
It was one of the great moments of my life.
Well, it's nice of you to say, and it's a wonderful honor, I know, and the plaque's out there. And as I said, you scrub it each morning with a toothbrush.
Yes, I do, and I will continue to.
Young Spike Odell joins us on the phone. Good morning, legend.
Hey, you guys. Dave, you are cleaning my plaque while you're out there.
Oh, absolutely. Spike, for you? Are you kidding?
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Do anything for you.
Spike's been heavily invested with a law firm in Panama, so I would think he'd have some money to hire somebody here.
You know, I heard news that got out to the public.
No, it's nothing. I wouldn't worry about it.
I'm not going to worry about it.
Yeah. One of my great thrills that when Spike was inducted was having Spike's grandchildren around here and seeing how crazy they were about him running around and jumping on him.
How cool was that?
Yeah, pretty cool.
You could tell they were Odells.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
His grand dudes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to go through the list of names here, and all of these folks have been notified and made aware in their family members. as appropriate. And we're going to have, you know, certainly the majority of them on the air at some point leading up to the actual ceremony. Item number one, Dave, let me start with you on this. Max Armstrong.
Max Armstrong, who was side by side with Orion for so many years and still is involved with the radio station, but one of the, along with Orion, the preeminent agribiz voices in America.
And part of the crime-fighting duo of Turbo and Sparky.
That's right.
There's that. Yes.
I'm Turbo, he's Sparky.
You guys haven't been out fighting crime a lot lately.
Well, you know, Max travels a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've had to do a lot of this stuff singularly. And we've had to pass up some of the big crimes and mostly write tickets, you know, because I can't get to everything. Spike, Floyd Brown is in, and you have to be of, a quote, a certain age to remember the contribution of Mr. Brown, I suppose?
What a classy guy. My first encounter with Floyd Brown was, believe it or not, in Champaign, Illinois, when I was a junior in high school. He interviewed a bunch of us because our team was playing in the state championship game. And that's when Channel 9 did the championship games, or, you know, all the high school basketball games. And that was my first encounter with him. And little did I know I'd end up working with him. And what I liked about him, great smile. He took me out golfing a couple of times. And I just couldn't believe I was golfing with Floyd Brown, the sure. Floyd Brown. I mean, this is a guy that could do it all. You ask him to go on the television, he could do it. He could, obviously, for years on the radio, his voice for a commercial, he could sell you a bucket of swamp water. He was good.
He was smooth like molasses. Matter of fact, I thought he made Orion sound a little bit weak.
Yeah, a little choppy. The most famous reference to Floyd Brown on this radio station, though, was not his own voice.
It was Ben Bentley.
Thank you, Floyd Brown.
Thank you, Floyd Brown.
Jim Carrillo. Jim Carrillo, the engineer, JC, as we call him here. Here's a guy who, and this is not news when I say this about engineers in broadcasting. They're a bunch of knuckleheads. Thank God we have them, because they know what needs to be plugged in and what needs to be unplugged. They know what buttons to push and what to fix. But they are a singular group amongst themselves who understands things we don't, but generally we don't want to let them out too long, and we don't want to be caught in an elevator with them.
He had great vision. He knew what was cool before it became cool. And what I liked about the engineering department under JC's direction, everything worked. You know, we worked.
Well, that's the point. That's
put duct tape on the transmitter tower. You know,
but that's the point I was going to make. Even though they're all a bunch of whack jobs, a lot of them will tell you it can't be fixed. JC was never like that. JC would look in the eye and he'd go, "Well, you know, it's going to take this. Or we're going to have to do that." But he was always willing to work with talent. And you have no idea how ridiculous talent is.
Yeah, we are a tough lot to deal with sometimes, but he did it. And I never knew he had a last name until you just said it.
JC? Oh, yeah.
JC.
And you think about the amount of live shows that have been done through the years on GN that JC had to coordinate. Holy mackerel.
Yeah, yeah. And I like the fact, too, that you know, inducting him into the Walk of Fame is—it's not for just the loudmouths that you hear. You know, us guys on the radio. It takes everybody from every department to make what you hear work well. And without engineering, you don't hear us.
It's a great point. We have four more to go. Stand by, Spike Odell, if you would, please. Back with Spike Odell. By the way, Leslie Munger, state comptroller, will join us in a few moments. And as always, we expect all of you to pull to the side of the road and write Leslie a check so we can pay for this state. Spike Odell, nice enough to join us. The legend Spike Odell, in addition to Dave Ennett, are both on the Walk of Fame. Let me go to Spike and find the right phone line. Hi, buddy.
Hey, buddy. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for doing this. We move on now to a man named Dan Fabian. Am I right about this? Did he hire both of you guys?
Yes.
He hired me.
Mm-hmm. Did he hire you too, Dave?
Hired me the first time.
The first time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I love Fabian.
Yeah.
He has a special thing going on between his ears. There's something.
Yeah. I owe my career to him because he heard something in me that a lot of people didn't hear, and he gave me a crack at it, you know. But what I remember about Dano was, I couldn't understand what he was saying when he said it. He talked in words that I had not yet learned when I was a kid.
Well, yeah.
When he hired me, for example, a couple of weeks after I got hired by WGN, and he sent me a letter back to the Quad Cities. I hadn't moved up yet, and I read it. And when I got done with it, I showed it to my wife. I said, am I still hired, or did I get fired?
Yeah, you know, Letterman used to say he ain't hooked up right. I just think Dan's hooked up differently than we are.
Yeah, yeah. Good man. Obviously, so many people owe their careers to him, me being one. This was a guy who wasn't afraid to take a chance, you know? Radio, I mean, what you do, what I do, what everybody on the radio does, you take a chance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he took a chance in the programming department with things, places that you were going to go, and sometimes they worked, sometimes they didn't. Thank God, most of them did. He was a great visionary.
For all the years that the radio station carried the Bears, one year along, a big fat lineman out of South Carolina named Refrigerator Perry shows up.
Yeah.
Actually, they weren't big and fat back then. They were just big.
Big.
And Fridge shows up, and I believe I have this story right. The Bears allowed Dan Fabian to give him his number.
That's right.
Yep.
72, baby.
Yeah.
That's right.
So yeah. 72, 720. Fridge wouldn't have worn 72 if not for Fabian.
That's right. It's just stuff like that.
Yeah.
They were throwing out a bunch of papers one time out of the files, and I was rifling through them, and I found the papers that he was having a conversation with the Beach Boys when they did the Cubs song, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I found all that correspondence between the Beach Boys and Dan Fabian about where it was going. And I still have it somewhere. Someday I'll put that on eBay for $1 million someday.
We're going to run out of time, and I don't want to short these final three because we're going to talk more about this next half hour because the final nominee is going to be on next half hour. But quickly here, Marilyn Miller did a job that women weren't allowed to do for the biggest personality in America and Wally Phillips when she produced Wally's show in the 60s. I knew Marilyn later on. I love Marilyn. She couldn't be a sweeter person.
She's a wonderful woman.
She is. She knows secrets about this place and stuff
yeah.
about this place that could have her killed by international agencies.
If anyone was to write a book, Marilyn should write a book, yeah. She and Wally, I mean, she was his everything. She was his Secret Service,
yeah.
Not only a great producer. You remember when Mr. Spock and Star Trek would put his hand on your head and they do a mind meld?
Yeah.
Well, she and Wally were in a mind meld forever because she knew exactly what he was going to do. She was way out ahead of him before it was even said. People don't realize how cool it is to have a producer that works like that. It's incredible
great.
To watch these guys work.
Tom Peterson, nobody crankier and nobody more committed to his job. Tom was your newsman. Tom was Bob Collins' newsman. Tom would come in every morning and bitch about being here and then kill it for the entire time he was here.
You know, I always used to make the analogy, or I used to make the observation that I never heard Tom Peterson screw up. Have you ever heard him screw up?
No, not once.
Not even mispronounce a word. Not even
Flawless.
Stumble. I mean, we all stumble reading a commercial, saying this, saying that. Tom never goofed up. He was a consummate professional.
And I hate to break it to you, he loved his job.
Oh, yeah.
Loved it. He would never admit it. You could pull his fingernails off, but he loved it.
He hired
classic news.
He hired
delivery.
You, didn't he?
Yeah, he hired me in 97 part-time and then full-time in 98, and I can't say enough about him. What a great boss and mentor he has been to not only me, but many of us who are still here.
Yeah, and a
me as well.
And he hired you as well?
Good friend of me.
Yes.
Good Larry P. I mean, Tom Peterson. Larry, I always call
you're very
Larry,
tight.
Yeah. But we will forever be connected by that morning of 9/11.
Sure.
He and I looking back and forth, and I remember the looks he would give me, and I would give him, like, what's going on?
Right.
Tommy, congratulations, man. So deserving.
And finally, though I believe the 820 Daily segment with me could end this for him, as of now, Dean Richards is on the Walk of Fame and a well-deserved place for Dean. We'll talk more to Dean about it next hour. But you guys will be here for the ceremony. I know that. Thank you, Spikey.
Hey, buddy. See you guys later. Love
Bye,
you
Spike.
All.
See you, Spike.
Bye, Spike. Miss you.
Love.
Say it.
Love you, Spike.
All right, 728. Let's reinvent the wheel here for a second with respect to the time that it took to appropriately go through everybody. Leslie Munger, our state comptroller, is standing by. She's one of my favorite guests because she tells the truth about the mess we're in. She's at Leslie Munger IL. And can we make her the big story?
Let's do it. Yeah, absolutely, because it is probably the big story, the biggest story in Illinois right now still.
The fact that we don't have any money?
The fact that we have no money.
She joins us now. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on this morning.
I appreciate it. What is the initiative you wanted to mention to the public?
Well, I wanted to tell everybody that we had have a big update to something that we have on our website. My predecessor, Judy Bartopinka, had put basically the state's checkbook online in a web portal called The Ledger, but it's kind of difficult to navigate because of our old system. So we've just updated and enhanced The Ledger. It's on my website at illinoiscomptroller.gov, and you can click on The Ledger. And actually, it makes it much more transparent, much easier for taxpayers to learn where the state is spending your money. We have popular search buttons that will give taxpayers a quick financial information on things like what our debt payments are, what we take in sales taxes or in education spending. It has a fiscal focus blog that takes complicated state financial information and presents it in easy to understand little chunks. And we've made it mobile friendly. So people who want to access this information on their phone or on their mobile device will be able to see it now. So look at ledger.illinoiscomptroller.gov or go to my website and click on The Ledger.
Yeah, the website, illinoiscomptroller.gov. Good morning, Leslie. How are we as well? I know we still don't have a budget, the only state in the union not to have one. Are we inching any closer at all to signing a budget or having a balanced budget?
Oh, I really wish we were. I will tell you, I just spent the last 2 days in Springfield, and I had a steady parade of people, municipal leaders, social service organizations, businesses in my office asking about payments. We are stretching the seams of our state to the point that they're starting to break, and we have, it seems to be, just no sense of urgency to get a budget in place. The legislature just came back after a nice long one-month break this week and went into session. And honestly, the House lawmakers spent yesterday debating a bill that would add catfish to a list of fish that can be hunted with a pitchfork, a spear, or with a bow and arrow. I mean, honestly, you just cannot make this stuff up. You know, we do not have a budget, and this is what they're working on.
What do we need to do? I mean, do we need to get on a bus and come there with burning clubs like we're storming them and they've raised the, you know, the drawbridge and we have to cross the moat? I don't understand how it almost, it's like Springfield's mocking us at this point. It's like, well, you guys aren't paying attention. We'll just do what we want.
It certainly feels that way. I'll tell you, I think everyone knows now we're in our 10th month without a budget. We are racking up bills. We have about $7 billion of bills right now in the House that we can't pay. There's over 67,000 bills sitting around waiting to be paid. We're looking at having a bill backlog of around $10 billion by the end of the fiscal year if we don't stop spending more money than we have coming in every month. And the groups that are really being hit hard, and everybody's seen this in the news, our universities are seeing credit downgrades. They're cutting programs and laying off staff. Homeless services, mental health facilities have not been paid at all. It's part of the government we cannot fund. And there are a lot of small business owners, small businesses that provide services to various state things. Our correctional centers is an example. People who provide food for them, they're not getting paid.
Home health.
Municipalities.
Home health care workers, too. That's what really,
correct.
You know.
Home health care. There's autistic programs for children, student MAP grants. I mean, there are people everywhere that are continuing to provide services because we've asked them to, but we are unable to make payments to them. And even our municipalities that are being run well individually are now having to pick up expenses that the state normally pays. An example of that would be the sewer and electric bills for our correctional centers. If a municipality has one of those in their area, they're paying those bills. We're not reimbursing them. Now it's stretching their budgets. So it's really well beyond time to get a budget in place.
Yeah, this is a bipartisan nightmare. And, you know, I would urge Republicans to speak to the governor about it. But I would also urge Democrats to reach out and ask your leadership why Mike Madigan is, this is me now, I'm not speaking for Leslie Munger, why Mike Madigan is continuing to be allowed to play this game where he runs the House the way he runs it and he doesn't deal with this. Because here's the thing. Everybody says, don't touch my stuff. Well, in the end, everybody's going to pay.
Right.
beyond what you're already paying. You're saying it hasn't affected me so far? It's because people like Leslie Munger have had to juggle the dimes as fast as possible to pay whatever bills they can pay and keep everybody else at the door, even though the knocking's getting louder every day. So, you want to protect your stuff all day? Protect it all you want. Your union leaders, you want to protect everything all day? Eventually, you're not going to have it. And if you think I'm wrong, we can turn into Detroit, just like nobody thought Detroit would turn into Detroit. It could happen in Chicago, and it'll affect the state and every county and every city.
I don't know if I've shared this example with your listeners, but it is something that I think helps bring this home to how bad the state's financial situation is, because everywhere I go, I talk about the billions of dollars, $7 billion of bills. We don't have the money to pay $2.5 billion of funding that we can't pay at all, $110 billion of unfunded pension liabilities. And people say, now, why can't you pay for this? And so we have about $100 million on average any given day to pay our bills with. But if I take six zeros off of all the numbers that I just shared with you, it gets these numbers down to numbers that we could understand in our own homes. And so it would be like you sat down to pay your own bills. You looked in your bank account. You'd see you had $100 in your bank account. You would see a stack of bills of over $7,000 that you had right there ready to be paid in front of you. You knew you spent more money. You just didn't have those bills in hand yet. This is our unfunded part of the government. You'd be expecting bills for about another $2,500 worth of bills. And if you opened up, I like to think of it like your credit card statement, because we have to make monthly payments on the pension contribution, you would see a bill of over $110,000. And we have $100 to pay that, to pay all those bills. And if literally, if you add six zeros to those numbers, that's where we are in the state. And yet, we have pension reform bills sitting in committee, stuck, not coming out to be discussed. And yet they're talking about catfish, and the leadership went home midday yesterday.
And education funding crisis, too. I mean, whether you want to ignore it or not, it is there. School funding, and obviously, as Leslie just said, pensions, too, still has to be addressed.
That is, education funding is looming, and now there's a lot of discussion about changing the school funding formula and holding up the funding of education and opening of the schools to get that done. And really, it's just not, it's an irresponsible way to run the government. It's hurting so many people. And we elect our leaders to get a budget in place. It's really the most important thing they're there to do. And we are 10 months into our fiscal year without it. And I hear discussion that there won't be a budget until after November. And honestly, I don't know that we can go that long.
Well, the untold damage between now and November will make what's happened already look like peanuts. And you can't even begin to quantify businesses that are going to leave, along with businesses that won't even consider coming here. And we know for a fact that people are moving out of the state at a higher rate than ever. We're not making this stuff up, kids.
I encourage everyone to reach out to your legislators. And in the meantime, support our businesses, our local businesses. They need our help, and volunteer wherever you can to help the social service agencies that aren't getting help. We've got to get through this, and we need our lawmakers and our governor to get together and to get a budget passed. And our lawmakers have to start putting the more important priorities first.
Oh, and by the way, this isn't cancer. This is self-made. Mm-hmm. This is self-made.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is made by horrible leadership for a generation or longer that's been made more horrible by the people that are still in those positions.
And Leslie, huge thanks to you, too, for coming on and addressing this in a very bipartisan way.
Thank you for doing it. Go back to work.
Welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Stop talking to us. Thank you.
Bye, Leslie. She's not kidding. The catfish bill.
Yeah.
Come on.
You got $100. You got to pay $110,000. What are you going to do? You got $100 in a checking account. You got $110,000 in bills. What are you going to do?
Send them catfish.
Yeah. Apparently that's the answer.
How ridiculous is that?
The crowd is just on his feet here. He's a Cinderella boy. Tears in his eyes, I guess, as he lines up this last shot. He's got about 195 yards left, and looks like he's got about an 8 iron. This crowd has gone deadly silent. Cinderella story out of nowhere. A former greenskeeper now about to become the Masters champion. It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Do you know Jim Nance plays harp on this?
While he's finishing off his burnt toast?
Yeah. burnt toast and a harp. Two of the joys he has. Each morning he gets up and he sits naked and plays harp while someone feeds him burnt toast. I think Teddy appreciates this as an introduction.
I'm sure.
Teddy Greenstein, your Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com. Knows college sports inside out, knows golf inside out. And Teddy and I, and Pat Boyle, we play at least once or twice a year, and Teddy steals our money. Good morning, Teddy. How are you?
Hello, friends. I'm the one feeding Bill McAtee burnt toast. I don't deal with Jim Nance anymore. Well, he's too fickle.
Well, and especially not when he's naked on the harp. I mean, talk about awkward.
He plays a mean harp. I mean, the guy is A+.
Before we get to Spieth, let's talk about Ernie Els. What happened yesterday, yips or not, was really difficult to watch. And yet he goes out, and what did he play the rest of the round in plus one?
Pretty much. I think we should actually spend the entire segment on Ernie Els. If this is 9 minutes, you know, give him a minute per shot on that
right.
hole. It was amazing. You know, one of the crazy things, of course, is that we all thought he'd made a 10. And actually, you know, it just gets hard to count when you get that high. And it turns out he'd made a 9. So for 4 hours, everybody had it wrong. So it's like, hey, the good news is he made a 9. He didn't make a 10. The bad news is it's still the worst score on the first hole in the history of the event. But, yeah, he had some putting problems, and to those I can relate.
Some putting problems? Some putting problems?
Usually guys like you give me the fourth putt, so I've never actually experienced the sixth putt.
You know, that's absolutely true. Every guy you've ever played with who has had that kind of problems, you go, dude, pick it up. Pick it up.
Yeah, we don't want to see this anymore. I don't care how much money I'm making. Just please leave the hole.
Now, what did he say afterwards? Because the comments I saw, I don't know if they were immediately afterwards, but he did talk about, you know, having the yips.
Oh, God. I give him props. You know, I was there, and he spoke to the international media, and then he came and did the national media, the Americans. So he fessed up to it. He certainly didn't pretend that it wasn't a heinous display of putting. You know, he couldn't have gotten away with saying anything else, though, because we had all just watched him on the 18th green missing from 2 feet.
Yep.
So, yeah, it wasn't just that one green. But he said he just kind of lost his mind and couldn't take the putter back and looked like a fool. So, yes, yes, and yes.
It happens to all of us that love the game and play the game a lot where, you know, you literally go into choke mode. I've done it in tournaments a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And,
you look down and you're like, where's this ball going to go? I can't tell you. I have no idea.
And what do you want to do? You want to get it over as fast as possible and then you make it worse. So,
yeah.
All right, let's move on to some good news, unless you want to talk about Dave's putting.
No, not my putting.
Jordan Spieth, I think everybody would have been, you know, probably expecting him to do well yesterday, but not to blow the doors off. Wasn't the weather a little nasty?
Yeah, you know, he did okay in the morning. It was pretty tame. But then as the day went on, it would be totally calm, and then the next thing you know, you'd have some trees swaying. So, I totally agree. I really didn't even take him for a top five this week. He came in just playing kind of spotty. He would have good rounds and bad rounds and just a lot of stress. I mean, can you imagine the stress of having to pick the menu for the champion's dinner? I mean, barbecue from Texas. Do you have pulled pork? Do you have briskets? Do you have tips? I mean, there's a lot of pressure being the guy who's coming back with that green jacket.
As Teddy, is surprising to me as the way Spieth played yesterday, not that he played well, I mean, I don't think we should be surprised by that, but was the struggles of some guys who I thought were slam dunks to be at the top of the leaderboard after day
like,
one.
Like, oh, Ricky, put, you're so fine, you
that'd
shot
be
80.
Free. He was one of my picks,
and
you
Bubba.
Know, shoots 80, and Bubba Watson, and then you had guys like Rory and Jason Day who gave up strokes late in the round.
Mr. Cat, I tell you what, the one that shocked me was Jason Day. I was out there on number 9. He almost jarred that thing twice. He hit an approach shot that almost went in on the way up and the way down. And I came back to the media center, and I was like, God, I knew this guy was going to win. It's over. And then I'm looking up a little bit later, and he made a triple on 16. And Bubba was struggling on 16, and Phil was having problems down the stretch. And Ricky, yeah, he was not so fine. I mean, 80, what are you doing, Ricky? So a lot of big boys, you know, got hit pretty hard yesterday.
Why was the back 9 so much more difficult? It's a more difficult 9 to begin with, but why was it so much more difficult yesterday?
I mean, 16, the wind must have been really messing with those guys. That's the only explanation. Or they were, like, really hungry because they just hadn't eaten in a while. You know, maybe there was that hangry kind of thing going on. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, but the weird deal there is the water that cuts front to the green, you know, long is always a problem at Augusta. I know that because I stood there, not because I played it. but it was weird to see so many guys rinse. You know, there were so many guys dumping balls in the water.
I know. It really was. And when that happens on a shot like that, it's obviously the wind. Look, I mean, if they're having putting problems, you know, they can say, oh, you know, the men of the Masters didn't want anybody to get to 19 under this year as Jordan did. And then they obviously finished 18 under and they don't want any more scorers to fail. But records to fall. But in this case, when guys are putting in the drink on 16, they are getting completely fooled, and obviously that's what happened.
And the Ricky Fowler thing, or I should say the Jason Day thing, didn't he tear it up on the front? What happened between the ninth tee and the 10th, or the ninth green and the 10th tee?
He saw me. I mean,
no, it's the curse of the greenstone.
Seriously, I mean, it's like, you know, how I covered six baseball teams between the Cubs and the Sox, and they were 0-for-6 on the playoffs. No, I mean, it was he seriously, I mean, at that point I was like, all right, this guy, man, why are we even here? You know, it's over. I mean, this guy's gonna fire 22 under this week. And strange game, we all know it, don't we, Steve? It comes and it goes at odd times.
Teddy, obviously high wind's a problem. You think that'll be an issue today? And are you kind of surprised that Tom Watson could actually make the cut? Could.
Yeah, I mean, he still strikes it pretty well, Mary. I mean, he's, you know, it's like that guy with that toothy grin, that gap-tooth grin, and he knows the place so incredibly well. The problem with him is we've all seen it 4 million times, man. If he's got to grind over four-footers and he wants to make the cut so badly, and the more you want it, the harder it's going to be. So I'm not surprised he had a good first round, still can strike it well enough, but I will be very surprised if he makes the cut.
Thanks, mostly Timmy. Legs. Yeah. Teddy, before we let you go, there's a VIP room that would put all other VIP locations to shame, whatever sports you cover anywhere, called Berkman's Place. Is that right?
That's it.
And you went in, right?
I can neither confirm nor deny. Oh, no, wait, I wrote a whole column about it. So, yes, I can confirm.
Why is it so crazy good?
Oh, my God. I mean, you get in there and you're like, what am I going to do first? If you walk to your left, there's like a little mini 9-hole putting course. If you walk to your right, there are replica putting greens of 16, 7, and 14. And you walk into a hut and they're like 100 different new putters to choose from. And then they give you their master stamp ball. And then you've got a caddy guiding you through and saying, sir, this is 11 feet of break. And you're attempting putts that actual professionals do on the course. And then once you get inside, it's a museum and four fancy restaurants, and there are no prices on any of the food or drink. So you just eat and drink whatever you want. Are you starting to understand why this place is so great?
I'm basically wondering why you're on the phone with us.
Because I don't have a Friday pass. I just had a Monday pass.
Teddy Greenstein, writing in the Tribune today, obviously.
Yeah, I had an Ernie L story in there today, and more to come tomorrow, man.
Thanks. And where do we follow you on social media?
Oh, at Teddy Greenstein. It's your favorite Twitter handle out there, Steve.
All right. You know it's true. Thanks. Did you want to say goodbye to Timmy?
Bye, Timmy.
Got a ton of texts congratulating everybody on the new class for the Walk of Fame. We'll talk to Dean Richards, who is in that new class, coming up here in just a few minutes. And a ton of texts also on Leslie Munger. Leslie Munger, state comptroller. Everybody loves her because she speaketh the truth. And the question keeps coming up, where's the money gone? Where's it gone? The amount of money that has to go to state-funded pension liability is the problem. It remains the problem. It was the problem. It is the problem. And going forward, it's the problem.
Yeah, and this is a problem, as we know, that's been just piling up over the years. This isn't just something that happened in the past 10 months. I know we haven't had a budget in 10 months, but we have been the state of Illinois, taking money and not paying its bills. But, if the state of Illinois was a person, they'd probably be in jail for tax fraud right now.
Well, of course. Yeah. At one point, I remember 25 cents of every dollar being the figure. I know it's higher than that now.
Yeah.
So when you cut that amount out and you still have to pay the rest of the state's bills, that's the short, too simple answer to where's all the money gone. Blackhawks lose late last night. You know the rule, sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. When the Hawks lose, the Hawks replay is a quickie. Let's listen.
The Blues win it in overtime. The final score, the Blues 2 and the Hawks 1.
I look forward to a lot of long, drawn-out Hawks replays during the playoffs.
That one was longer than I expected.
Yeah. Well, it was a good game.
It was a good game.
For 59 and a half minutes. Well,
59
minutes and a few seconds.
Yeah.
I have the scores from round one of the Masters in our Masters pool, not including the listener picks and my mom's picks, but we'll add those later. Mary Vandeveld is last currently of the six of us.
Huh. That's a shock.
Had to bring that up.
Mary Sandberg, second to last. Fourth place is Mike Jacobson. Third place, Dave Ennett. Second place, Steve Cochran.
And I'm in first?
First place, Andrea Darlis.
Oh, look at that, Dave Ennett.
They might as well know. Well, that's why
Spieth, Rose, Day, and Stenson would be your tiebreaker.
It's been one day.
Well, yeah, why is it? And why is it me? There were, I believe,
well,
four
they
other...
fight. We'll be back in a moment with the news. Right? Go ahead and take care of this first.
Why did you do this? Look at her. She's out of control.
She's out of control, yeah. You know, honestly, I can't argue. This is Dean's ringtone. Congratulations, buddy.
Woo.
Dean Richards.
Way to go, Dean.
Should be arriving at the Dean Mike any second there in the Channel 9 newsroom.
Okay, tell him I can't speak to him directly anymore.
Oh, I see. So you actually need to refer to someone else?
He's going to have to talk to my people from now on.
Walk of Fame inductee.
How about that?
To be inducteed shortly at a date to be announced soon. You get a plaque forever. People will, for years, come to the Tribune Tower, long after you're dead, Dean.
Yep.
I mean, I'm talking fall, winter, long after you're gone. And they're going to come by, and they're going to see your plaque, and they're going to go, that's the guy.
That doesn't happen.
No.
Does not.
Nasty.
Pretty cool, man. That's an accomplishment.
I'm beyond honored. Beyond honored. I feel like I just started at WGN.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't know, but you and Dave would.
I haven't started twice like some people have.
Yeah, well, yeah. That does happen. Yeah. By the way, Friday, May 27th is the date.
Oh, I'm busy that day. Can
10,
I move it? No.
10 to 11:30 in the morning.
Is that official?
Yeah. Well, it's on WGNradio.com.
It is now.
Yeah.
That's also what I had heard.
I thought we were actually moving it, but
also,
that's okay.
Also what I
it's
had
on the
heard.
Website.
Dean, okay. You're going to bring your mom, right?
Yeah, she's out of the hospital, by the way. So
excellent. She making yogurt for everybody?
Not yet, but I don't know how many people show up. I know we had quite a crowd for the past two inductions. So, you know, maybe she can make yogurt for 1,000 people. I don't know.
Yeah, and...
I know she just had heart surgery, but come on.
Yeah, get off your... let's go.
Enough with the pity party. Let's get working. Greek women. What?
Well, it's very cool.
It's very, very nice.
Let me just run through the rest of the class again for people who missed the announcement.
You mean this isn't all about me?
Jim Carrillo.
Our former chief engineer.
One of the few normal engineers I ever met.
Very true. Yeah. One of the most talented, one of the most patient...
Yeah. I mean, who knows what he said about us behind closed doors, but to our face, he was very respectful.
He said some things to my face, too, but I've deserved them. He is really, all the technical things that we do on the air are because of the genius of JC, Jim Carrillo.
Floyd Brown.
Program host on WGN, and he was the second voice on the Victory Auto Wreckers commercial. Carl Grayson being the first, then Floyd Brown, and then I took over in 1991 with the franchise. We're all of us who have done this. There is a Victory Auto Wreckers Hall of Fame also that we should all be.
Yeah, in. You thought the Walk of Fame was a big deal.
Yeah,
Max Armstrong,
legendary
rascal,
ag broadcaster.
You know, it's funny. Rick Hogan's the only grown man who can call another grown man sweetheart without fists being flying. And Max Armstrong is one of the few grown men that can call you a rascal.
Yep.
And not have someone chase you down the street.
And does all the time.
The great Marilyn Miller. Again, I mentioned this earlier, for a woman in the 60s
to help run a show as big as Wally's. It just wasn't done.
Yeah. She was, back in the day, now we have computers, now we have a lot of technical assistance. Back in the day, doing a radio show was pretty organic. And Marilyn Miller was the cog that made everything on the old Wally Phillips show work.
Cranky Tom Peterson?
He's great.
Hold on a second. I didn't say he wasn't great. But you cannot tell me he's not one of the crankiest people you've ever met. Cranky Tom Peterson. That should be his full-on air name, Cranky Tom Peterson.
Love it's Tom. All a facade.
I love him, too, but I'm telling you. At what point did you walk into Tom? This is what happened. I'd fill in for Tom. I'd be sitting in Spike's chair filling in for Tom. He'd go, you're going to close those stupid blinds? Hey, good morning, Tom. How you doing?
That's true. He did always want the blinds closed.
Yeah, yeah. Blinds like across the room, like 100 yards away from him.
When I first started at WGN, like the first month, he yelled at me because I was 5 minutes late for the news. That would never happen now.
No. Can you imagine Tom working on this show? His head would explode. but I love Tom. I love everybody on this list. Well, I don't know Floyd Brown, but I'm sure I would love him if I knew him.
Floyd Brown, one of the really great gentlemen that I've known through the years. And when I first started, very, 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 welcoming and helpful. Listeners and viewers on my Facebook page this morning making some comments on this. William Kelly is suggesting, is there a way that we can combine the Walk of Fame and pothole repairs in Chicago? Mm. That way it would be some benefit.
We take the plaques and we fill a pothole?
We fill a pothole, with the holes.
I'd be like adopt a highway, but you could drive over Dean's plaque?
Yeah, I think it'd be great.
Not a terrible idea.
Somebody else wants to know, will Mel Gibson be at the ceremony?
Oh! And Meg Ryan.
I'm going to invite both of them.
Yeah, you have to, Dean.
I may fly Mel Gibson in.
And Meg Ryan.
That's how funny that is. last person on the list, Dan Fabian, who I saw here the other day, and I love Dan. He actually hired me and fired me in the hallway.
What?
Yeah, because he had never had a chance to do either. So he hired me while we were waiting for the elevator, and he fired me in the elevator. So.
He seriously did hire me at WGN. Yeah. He was the general manager that hired me. So he's responsible for all of those of you that spend most of your day sending me hate mail. Really, it should be going to Dan Fabian.
And that's what we're talking about. We'll come back, talk about show business. By the way, I don't know if you heard the announcement because you're doing your little TV play thing that you do over there, that practice thing, whatever you do. But when we were talking about this last hour, I suggested that maybe this 8:20 segment would kill your chance for the Walk of Fame before the plaque is made.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Really, every day that we do the segment here is a career killer.
Yeah.
Is a potential career killer. I think that's what most people love about it, is today the day that either Dean or Steve will be fired because of something that's happened.
Yeah, with me. It's not even called fired anymore. They just call it again.
And that's just me and Dave talking by the water cooler.
Exactly.
There's the high potential of it today.
Chicago Cheap Trick, Melissa McCarthy, Jake Gyllenhaal, all on Dean's agenda we come back.
On the Chicago Cheap Trick thing, Chicago's manager, Pete Chiavarelli, explaining why Peter Cetera has turned down the opportunity to be part of the induction.
Well, there's a little broadcast tease for you. Stick around, kids.
It's how you get in the Walk of Fame and stuff like
so.
That.
I better pay attention. Yep.
You can travel Chicago.
Wintrust Community Bank's hour continues.
Be calling his name.
Sponsored by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Health Care Center and plaque makers around America. We return to Dean Richards, Walk of Fame inductee.
How are you not in the Walk of Fame after reading a commercial like that?
Yeah, I mean, come on. Bringing it.
That's Walk of Fame material right there.
They actually wanted me to be in the last couple of years, and I said, no, not me.
Can I say, I'm extremely grateful and so proud and so honored. Can we get a Vince Lloyd in the Walk of Fame next year?
I think Vince Lloyd's been in the discussion each year. Here's the way it works, and I'm not kidding about the process because I'm tangentially involved. There's a list of names, and it's a long list of names when you got a radio station been around for 90 years. The list is whittled down to a few names, and then there's four or five people that get a vote, and then that vote is whittled down a little bit, or that list is whittled down a little bit more to a reasonable number. So,
I know it's that's with any awards thing. It's like, how is this one in and that one's not in?
Yeah,
But, you know, right? Dave, Vince Lloyd, one of the
Vince and Lou.
Yeah, Vince and Lou both.
Vince and Lou, they're
two of the most legendary names ever. Mm-hmm. That's going to be, Steve, that's going to be my first job once I am officially an inductee.
Yeah.
I'm going to spend the rest of the year.
I can't believe you're not even in the ground yet and you're already organizing a protest.
A blue ribbon committee.
He's already got a hashtag, Vince and Lou Lives Matter.
Sports.
All right, let's do some of this.
Has anyone ever been inducted and kicked out on the same day?
All right, so tell me the Chicago story.
All right, so congratulations to the group Chicago. I'm so happy for these guys. I've been covering them pretty much since they started, certainly since I've started in this business. But the first concert that I ever hosted was the group Chicago, and tonight they will be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as will Rockford's own Cheap Trick. Great guys. We did long interviews with both of them last week. We're going to have the Chicago interview on this week, and we'll have Cheap Trick's interview on soon after that. But so the induction's in New York City tonight. All of Cheap Trick will be there, plus past members of Cheap Trick. They all get along. For the group Chicago, former drummer Danny Serafin will be there. A lot of people have been asking about that. He's one of the originals. The sister of Terry Kath, the legendary guitarist for the group Chicago, who accidentally shot himself while he was cleaning a gun and died in 1978. His sister will be there representing Terry. But then there's the Peter Cetera story with this whole thing. He was the longtime vocalist for the group. And he left the group to take on a solo career. There apparently, all these years later, still is bad blood between them. I talked with the members of the band last week. I talked with their manager, Pete Chiavarelli, last week. And I'm like, what's the deal with this? I mean, you know, can't we all just get along? It's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction. And they explained a very, very long story where Peter Cetera was invited by the group to be part of the ceremony. And then Peter Cetera started making demands. If he was going to be part of it, this had to happen, that had to happen. Here we have a little bit of my interview with the manager of the group Chicago, Pete Chiavarelli, explaining what this craziness is.
We wanted him to do 25 or 6 to 4, which is our signature song. And then a whole bunch of things evolved after he turned it down completely. He waited a week or so and then issued a new statement saying, I will be coming out with a statement that will shock everyone. We didn't know what he was going to say. And he came out and said he absolutely would not be coming. And during that time, he had called me, wanted to bring 3 or 4 members of his band to play in place of guys who've been here for 30 years. I said, Peter, you know, you can't do that. These guys have been with us. The guys in your band have never played a Chicago concert. They've never been on a Chicago album. We can't do that.
So
seems pretty reasonable on the part of the managers.
Absolutely. I mean, they invited him to be part of it, and he's like, get rid of those guys and bring in my guys. You know, I want this, I want that. So officially now, Peter Cetera will not, unfortunately, be part of the ceremony tonight. I think his loss, he was a big part of the group, you know, big part of the group's success. But, you know, all the boys can't play in the sandbox together still after all these years, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's funny. You're talking about a bunch of guys who none of them would be where they are without each other. And it sounds like the original band made a pretty good offer. And Peter Cetera, at what, 65 years old or whatever, is being pretty childish, if all that's true.
Seems like it. It's unfortunate. But still, a great day for the group Chicago, a great day for Cheap Trick. Ceremony is tonight in New York City. It will be on HBO, but not until later on this month. So they haven't actually set an official date on this yet, but once we find that out, we'll talk about that. But on Sunday morning, Jimmy Pankow from the group Chicago, Bobby Lamb, Robert Lamb, Lee Locknane, some of the originals, talking about the Hall of Fame, talking about the early days. We're going to salute the group Chicago this coming Sunday morning.
Melissa McCarthy is going to do the Gilmore Girls, but how's her movie, The Boss?
Unfortunately, not so good. Needs to get the pink slip. Not funny. You know, isn't it funny how some of her comedies are fantastic? Notably, the ones that she does with director Paul Feig.
Yeah.
Bridesmaids, Spy, The Heat. The ones that she has done with her husband, Ben Falcone, not so good. Tammy, and yep. now this.
Yep.
That's it's excessive. It's bumbling and stumbling. It's obnoxious. It's not. You know, Melissa McCarthy's amazingly talented, and this movie doesn't really allow that to happen. It's almost like anything goes. It's very R-rated as well, so I wound up just give. There is a lot of Chicago in it, and I'm a sucker for that, so I gave it a Dean's List C. The one canceled out the other, but overall not that great. And Jake Gyllenhaal's new movie, Demolition, is just one of these esoteric, overly artsy messes. It's about a guy who's trying to recover from his wife being killed in a car accident. The way that he does that is by disassembling everything in his house, destroying things. It was over my pay level of artsy esoteric-y stuff. So I didn't like the movie at all. I gave it a D, Dean's List D on that one.
Congratulations again, man. We'll hear you Sunday.
Appreciate it, bud. Thank
you. All right,
you.
See you, bud.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
If you start getting into a situation in which the process of appointing judges is so broken, so partisan, that a eminently qualified jurist cannot even get a hearing, then we are going to see the kinds of sharp partisan polarization that have come to characterize our electoral politics seeping entirely into the judicial system. And erodes the institutional integrity of the judicial branch.
You know, the Founding Fathers came up with a pretty good plan. Worked out okay. United States of America running pretty well. Pretty well. Most of the time. Three separate but equal branches. You can't have one branch more important than the other. One branch holding power over the other. And what the Republican Party and the Republican senators particularly have been trying to pull is just nonsense. We'll get to all of that in a second with Senator Durbin. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Nice to see you.
Looks like opening day outside.
I don't know how the White Sox are going to play in this slop.
They're going to have to shovel their way to first base.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Mother Nature seriously has some sort of hormonal imbalance going on because she's cranky. Before we get to any of that, you talked about opioid abuse this week, and this is a big problem. You know, we saw a funky commercial on the Super Bowl everybody made fun of, but this is a big deal.
Steve, there isn't a town in Illinois too small or a suburb too wealthy to be spared from this. Heroin overdose deaths, tragic overdose deaths on a daily basis. This week in Springfield, Illinois, a friend of mine lost his daughter. Ugh. Who was a mother of two. And it is just a tragedy that is unfolding. Here's where it starts. Last year, the pharmaceutical industry produced 14 billion opioid pills. 14 billion. Enough for a one-month prescription for every adult in America. Way beyond what's needed for pain management. And so now they're flooding the market with opioids because they've become, frankly, the currency on the street.
So what do you do about it legislatively?
Well, you start with the pharmaceutical industry accepting some responsibility. Secondly, the medical profession. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of excuses. Oh, we want our patients to feel good. Is that why you gave them 50 opioid pills to take home when they may have needed five? It's so you won't get called on the weekend many times. And I think, frankly, they accept some responsibility. Pharmacies do as well. The good news, if there is any, is the fact that this heroin epidemic, now stretching way beyond the inner city, all over our state, has become a universal cause. It's no longer an inner city issue. And we're not talking about drug addiction in terms of moral culpability. We're talking about it as a medical disease.
Well, part of the reason is from the North Shore to Naperville to every alleged affluent suburb there is, you've got severe heroin problems.
And let me add another thing here. Luckily, two senators, Paul Wellstone and Pete Domenici, Democrat and Republican, fought to make sure that every health insurance policy under the Affordable Care Act now covers mental health counseling as
crucial.
Well as treatment for those who are addicted.
Absolutely crucial.
And that is a dramatic increase in opportunity for families to take a child or a loved one who's facing this addiction and bring them into professional treatment.
Well, I keep hearing that the pharmaceutical lobby is almost as big and as angry as the NRA. True or not true?
True. Very true.
So how do you handle that?
And they're very sophisticated. And we're living in a world of super PACs where they are very generous. because they're very profitable and they have friends in high places. But look at what's happening to our country. I mean, if I go to Dixon, Illinois, which I visited a few months ago, and look at what they faced there after two local teenagers died, they finally said, we've got to do something right in our little 16,000 population town. And so they adopted a policy out of Gloucester, Massachusetts, where the chief of police said, we're not going to arrest you if you walk in and say you've got a problem. We're going to send you to treatment. 28 people walked in the next week or 10 days into that police department in Dixon, Illinois, and were sent to treatment. You know what happened next? The jail was empty. It was empty because all the petty crime to support a drug addict disappeared.
Yeah, because it is an industry.
It is.
It's an industry with
and
multiple levels.
It's an expensive
levels.
Industry for an addict. They've got to come up with revenue every single day.
The doctors that you've spoken to or the people that you spoke to in the medical side of this, the provider side, does it appear to be an overprescription problem for the majority of doctors, or is it a small segment that's doing it?
I don't want to generalize, but I'll tell you first that pain management is a relatively new concept. When was the first time you went into a hospital or doctor's office and looked up and saw that chart of smiling and frowned faces, and they said, well, how do you feel on this chart?
Yeah.
That's when we started thinking about pain management, which is a very, very important thing that we get right.
Sure.
There are people who are in chronic pain who need help all the time, every single day.
Right.
But giving a whole, you know, I had my knee fixed in a surgery a few years ago. Loretta was cleaning out the bathroom. She said, you've still got 50 of these OxyContin.
You didn't want to take
them. And I said, what am I going to do with? I didn't take any of them.
Could have sent them to Rush Limbaugh at that point.
Please. don't
I'm not helping.
Up,
I'm not helping, am
political
I?
Opportunities
not helping you. Sorry, I'm not helping. Yeah. It's an important message, and people need to take action on it as well.
And
is there a particular
have,
bill that we need to support,
well,
or is it
say,
too early?
First, we've got to expand the opportunities for beds to treat those who are addicted. Haymarket is an amazing operation right here in Chicago, and there are many just like it. And our laws confine or restrict them in terms of the beds that they can make available.
When we come back, I want to talk to you about the campaign and whether or not Hillary, and you said something very funny last time you were in. I don't know if you remember this, but we were talking about Bernie, and Senator Durbin said there's nothing he's screaming about. He hasn't been screaming at me at lunch about for years. But whether or not Bernie and Hillary are going to turn into Trump and company because the Democrats got loud this week. So we'll see where that's going to go. And then I want to ask you about Merrick Garland, because this is not a pet issue for me. This is just absolute nonsense, the way the Republicans in the Senate have handled this, with the exception of Mark Kirk and a few others.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
And she is, through her super PAC, taking tens of millions of dollars in special interest funds. Let me just say in response to Secretary Clinton, I don't believe that she is qualified.
You know, I got Senator Durbin's here. Bernie Sanders has run largely a pretty smart campaign for a guy who didn't make a lot of noise in the House and hasn't gotten a lot done in the Senate. I mean, sorry, it's true. But he's gotten a lot done as a presidential candidate. But this week, it feels like the wheels have come off.
Well, it's crunch time. And there's a real question of credibility in terms of whether you can finish and whether you can win.
Right.
And so the rhetoric's been heated up a little bit in the course of this week. I don't think we're quite to the level of the other party.
Getting closer.
Praise the Lord. And I hope we don't reach it. But yes, it's a little, there's more tension.
There's plenty of things you can criticize both Clintons for, but you can't say that she's not qualified. She may be the most qualified candidate in my lifetime.
Well, it started with an interview on television on Morning Joe where Hillary Clinton was asked the same question. Is Bernie Sanders qualified to be president? And instead of saying yes, she gave a good answer, a good political answer, said let the people decide, let the voters decide. And Bernie thought that raised a question about his qualifications, so he questioned her qualifications, and that's how the exchange got started.
That's when it turns into the 12-year-old Donald Trump answer.
A little too much of
it. He started it. No, you started it.
Yeah, a little too much of it. But I here's what I'm hoping for, obviously, on the Democratic side, is that when it's all said and done, the sharp contrast between the Democratic nominee and the Republican nominee will bring our folks home. I know there's a lot of emotions, and people feel very intense at this moment. But come July, come August, the choice will be clear.
The argument on the Republican side is that if Trump's not the nominee, there's going to be lots of trouble. And the base is blown up. And, well, the party's a mess to begin with. But having said that, you've got a huge groundswell of support for Bernie Sanders. And whether or not she has any place for him in her administration if she were to win. And, by the way, we asked her that on the show, and she said she absolutely would, you know, want to hear from him and have him have a voice.
Sure.
It does seem like he's brought up a lot of good ideas in big picture form that ought to be used. Is she going to be likely to take those beyond, you know, Election Day?
Well, the interesting thing and point that was made by the president yesterday is there are so many fundamentals that they agree on. When it gets down to it, you know,
right.
You know, there's only one major political party in the world today that denies climate change, the Republican Party of the United States of America. And so there's no question on our side that we are facing some serious changes in our world that need to be addressed honestly. When it comes to education, when it comes to health care, when it comes to basic human rights and civil rights, you know, there is a meeting of the minds on the Democratic side, even though there are a lot of differences on day-to-day campaigning.
Right.
So I think there is a good basis for unifying afterwards, and I really believe President Obama may play an important role in that.
That's what I think we've seen, too, Senator, is that with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders both calling each other to congratulate each other on their various primary victories, we don't see that within the Republican Party. Are the Democrats in Washington kind of watching the GOP unravel during all of this?
Yes, and I can tell you that a lot of Republican senators are looking at their shoes. They don't know what to do next. I can tell you that Ted Cruz of Texas is the most unpopular senator among Republicans.
Why? But unpopular why? Because I know why I don't like him. I mean, he makes my skin crawl. I don't like what he stands for. I don't like what he says. I don't like who he hangs out with. But I also don't like the attitude. And I don't like the way people who are even close to him associate with him. You guys who work with him every day, why is he so unpopular?
Because the senators know him. They've watched him.
So it's like working with anybody. If there's somebody you work with this morning at work and it's somebody you don't like them because you work with them.
It's not one bad day. It is a pattern of conduct.
Right.
He literally shut down the government of the United States of America so he could read Dr. Seuss on the floor and draw the spotlight. And when he tried to explain it, I've talked to Republican senators. He tried to explain in his Republican Senate caucus why he was doing it. They said, Mr. Cruz, you don't even understand the procedures of the Senate.
Right.
We are not going to ultimately vote on the Affordable Care Act. You're going to lose and we're going to look bad. He said, I'm going to do it anyway. And that's
why, didn't care. Made it about him.
That's exactly right. And that's why all but one of the Republican senators, I guess two now, walked away from him. They just don't have any confidence in his style of leadership and don't believe he'd be a good president.
The judge, Merrick Garland, is eminently qualified for the Supreme Court. He's tanned, he's rested, and he's ready. And there is a system that the forefathers are smart enough to put into play, which is fair. It's time-tested, and it ought to be used. The Senate Judicial Committee gives them a fair hearing, and then the Senate, which is still controlled by the Republicans, go ahead and vote. Why are they afraid to do that?
They're afraid to do it because he's hard to ignore and he's hard to vote against. He has such an outstanding record. But even before his name was announced, they said to this president, you don't get a fourth year in this presidency. You may have won by 5 million votes and thought you had a four-year term, but it's actually 3 years and 2 months. You're finished.
It's the biggest, it's the most asinine argument I've seen anybody put forward.
Steve,
forever.
Let me tell you, and it's rare that a politician would go this far out on a limb, and I'm going out on it right now. We have never, underline the word never, in the history of the United States, denied a presidential nominee a hearing and a vote. Never. Never. And when Ronald Reagan, Republican president, had a vacancy on the Supreme Court in his last year as president, Anthony Kennedy, he ended up submitting that to the democratically controlled Senate, which unanimously approved that nomination by Ronald Reagan and sent Kennedy to the Supreme Court.
One of the exceptions to the partisanship is your colleague, Senator Mark Kirk. And I always marvel, and we've discussed this before, too, at how you two have managed to work together across party lines for the betterment of the state. And Mark Kirk was one of the first Republicans and one of the few to meet with Merrick Garland.
It's true. And Susan Collins of Maine. Mm-hmm. And the two of them are exceptions. And I don't understand this because when these Republican senators go home and face town meetings, a colleague of mine in Kansas just went through this, and people are saying, well, you know, why aren't you fair? Why don't you give this guy a hearing? You can vote against him, but for goodness sakes, you won't. Some people won't meet with him, and others won't give him a hearing.
It's ridiculous.
It is bad. They're going
to
answer for it.
If you take it beyond Election Day and the Republicans somehow manage to maintain control of the Senate and there's a Democrat in the White House, what changes?
Well, I'm not sure. And that, of course, is up to the voters. They've have to decide what they want the Senate to look like and basically how they want the Supreme Court to be created for a generation to come. And that's what elections are all about.
Well, the other thing that's patently offensive about the entire thing is the idea that you wouldn't meet with Merrick Garland is based in this notion that he is some wild judge who is going to rule specifically liberally on every case that comes across his desk. which is an assault on his integrity and a completely unfair process as well. It's like me calling you a liar without knowing you. They haven't sat down with him to have any of those discussions to even show that he's had a pattern of that.
And, of course, he has a record. And the record, the president chose him not to make a play for the November vote, but really to say, I'm going to send a person that you can't say no to.
Right.
You know, this person really is going to meet the test. And I met with him the other day. What a nice person. I mean, grew up right. in Lincoln Woods, Skokie area. We talked about his family background. You know, his mom and dad, their idea of a big vacation, let's get in the car and go to Starved Rock. I mean, that was their idea of a big adventure. It kind of tells you a story about the home they grew up in, the circumstances, the values. He is an exceptional person.
Is he disappointed by this, and would he at some point withdraw his name, or is he in it for the long haul?
I think he's in it, and I think the president had to sit down with him and look him straight in the eye and say, my friend, we're in for a rocky road here,
right.
If you're willing to travel it. And here he's chief judge of the D.C. Circuit Court, which is the second highest court of the land, so he has a fallback position, that's for sure. But, you know, hats off to him. He said, I'll go through this process, and it's a tough one.
I don't even know if this is a question you can answer in short form or without me dozing off, because it involves Senate rules and policies and things. But, you know, I'm no fan of Harry Reid and the outgoing Senator Harry Reid. But he does have some powers that he could execute, including, as I understand it, and tell me if I'm wrong, there's a narrow option that he could put into play that could force a hearing. Is that true or not true?
No, I don't know about forcing a hearing. There's been a question about discharging the nomination from committee without a hearing.
Okay.
That's been proffered, and we're not jumping at that. We think a hearing is the right way to go, and to bring a nominee to the floor without a hearing would be unprecedented and would raise a question as to, well, what do you know about him? What has he said? Put him under oath. Ask the hard questions.
And you still get the hearings. You still get the vote.
Absolutely. And if the Republicans decide to a person they're going to vote against him, so be it.
Yeah,
I don't like
the consequences.
But, you know, that is an outcome which is constitutional.
And it comes down to the thing we always tell you, the power remains with the people. That part of the system still works, whether it's Springfield and the mess here or in Washington and the election in November. At a time where you all feel apathetic and feel like you can't change things, the only way you can change things is to show up and vote.
Absolutely.
So nice to see you.
Good seeing you, too.
Enjoy the weekend.
Bring your snow boots to open day.
I will.
We'll talk a little more politics with my old friend Nick Zitzen coming up, and also this hour, Aaron Katursky from ABC News, about a story out of, was it Florida? There's a story coming up that you're going to love that you got to hear before 10 o'clock, and we break for the weekend. Let's take that break. Come back with the news next. You can, of course, see whatever Senator Durbin is doing at his website, durbin.senate.gov.
There you go.
Huh? And people thought I was slipping. Also at Senator Durbin on social media. More in a moment.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
All right, 9:14 before we get to the guest. Andre Dowes, what do you have?
Steve, in a story breaking this morning out of San Antonio, Texas, local TV stations in San Antonio, reporting that the county sheriff is responding to an active shooter situation at Lackland Air Force Base. That entire base is on lockdown. It's in San Antonio. So they're responding to reports of an active shooter at Lackland Air Force Base. Of course, we'll keep you updated as we know more information about this.
If you listen to this show in its first incarnation and have listened to politics in Chicago for years, you'd likely know the name Nick Zitzen. Nick, at Nick Zitzen, N-I-C-K-T-Z-I-T-Z-O-N. Hey, wait, is he one of your people?
He is one of my people.
I think he might be one of your people. Nick left a few years ago to become the Senior Vice President of Global Corporate Affairs for SAP, and the right hand to CEO Bill McDermott, chief of staff, if you will, for Bill McDermott. I'm still trying to get him to run for office because Nick comes from a Republican party of ideas, not a Republican party of screeching and yelling and creating a scene. And he joins us now, I assume, from Philly. Is that where you are?
That's exactly where I am.
Good morning, my friend. How are you?
I'll tell you. I was proud to live in Chicago for 3 years. There are two institutions that I really miss. One of them is the Chicago Blackhawks, and the other is WGN Radio and the Steve Cochran Show.
Nice of you, buddy. I appreciate that.
Exactly. No,
let's cover what's important. How's your family?
Family's great. Hey, speaking of family, I have to say first that I saw that you announced today that Marilyn Miller was being added to the WGN Walk of Fame. And I just want to give a shout-out on behalf of the Wally Phillips family to Marilyn Miller. What a legend she is. And we're all so proud of her.
You should explain that you know this story intimately.
I do. I do. I remember when I first met Wally's daughter, Jennifer, who is now my wife of 10 years and the mother of my two daughters. I remember meeting Wally, who was already sick at the time. And, you know, there was a limit to what Wally could really tell you about what he had done on WGN.
Uh-huh.
And the woman who was the most emphatic, proud, and enthusiastic spokesperson for everything that he had accomplished, who wasn't a member of his immediate family, was Marilyn Miller, who might as well be a member of the immediate family because of everything she did behind the scenes as his producer, as his friend, as his colleague. And, God, she's just been such a terrific friend to the entire Phillips family.
Can't say it any better than that. Let's talk about this Republican mess. In your life, could you have imagined this Trump-Cruz mess?
God, there's so much blame to go around for it, too, right? It's like, how many different ways can you think about to say who's at fault for what the Republican Party has become? Nobody likes Ted Cruz, and the fact that he is now sort of the best alternative to Donald Trump, I really don't know what that says about where the party is right now.
You know, Governor Romney well and worked for him, and I'm a fan, and I think if not for a few unfortunate choices and then a ridiculous campaign and outright lies by Harry Reid, he probably would have been president in 2012. Having said that, he finally stood up against Trump and created this anti-Trump wave, which has now gained steam. I have a sense that, especially with Wisconsin, some of this Trump fever's been broken. Am I wrong about that?
No, I don't think you're wrong. I mean, I think the question is it too late? You know, if you go into a Republican convention with Trump still having a delicate lead, which, I mean, Cruz, it looks like will do a good enough job to make it relatively close. But as Trump goes in, let's just say for sake of argument, Trump goes in with a delegate lead, and you have a contested convention, and the person who technically won the most delegates does not end up the nominee, I don't know what that does for the party either. I mean, I find it hard to believe that Trump supporters are going to show up enthusiastically at the ballot box in November to vote for anybody else if they feel like their candidate had the nomination taken from him. So it's still a mess.
If 35% of the people have voted and the majority of those have chosen Trump and none of them show up to vote, then the onus falls on the other 65% to show up. And I don't know any way that math is big enough to beat Hillary Clinton, because I don't believe Bernie Sanders will be the nominee, even though he's brought up a lot of ideas that have made Hillary's days long and disastrous. This 2016 mess just goes on and on and on. But what about the idea that the party, the Republican Party, gets saved by preventing Trump and Cruz legally through the rules that are established from becoming the nominee? In other words, if you don't have 1237, you don't win.
I don't see it, right? I don't see it. I find it hard to believe that anybody ends up the nominee of the Republican Party other than Trump or Cruz.
Okay.
I just don't see it. And I think that, you know, for good reason, right? I mean, Ted Cruz, for whatever people think about him, has run the most credible campaign from a logistic perspective, right? He did a great job. And Donald Trump has won the most votes, and he's been the most effective at tapping into the sentiment of the Republican primary voter base. So it's hard to argue, just on the basis of the reasons you and I both know and could talk about for hours, that they shouldn't be the nominee when the majority of people who voted in the Republican primary said it should be one of the two.
So, because you've been in these conversations, do conversations take place behind closed doors that go something like this? We are better off running Trump or Cruz and losing than blowing up the party by not having one of those two.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, it may well be a foregone conclusion that, you know, a two-term incumbent Democrat who's not totally unpopular gets in effect a third term by his party winning the presidency on his coattails. It's happened before. You know, George Bush winning a third, you know, Reagan term, for lack of a better argument. And it may be that the Republican Party needs a fairly disastrous November in order to put itself back together to be able to hold up a viable option 4 years down the road to take back the White House after 12 straight years of Democratic control. That wouldn't be outside the realm of possibility. It's happened before in history. Boy, is it messy to watch, though.
Nick, talk about messy to watch. I've never seen so much changing of the rules with an open convention, the same party that won't hear Merrick Garland's nomination, that they're supposed to be following those rules, essentially, of the Constitution. Isn't there outcry within the party?
Yeah, absolutely, Andrea. And it's like outcry in the party from all sides of the party. You know, the people who know the rules and are most effective at being able to change them, they're exactly the kinds of people that are absolutely loathed by the Trump and the Cruz voters, who feel like the establishment rulers of political parties have taken us down a path where no promises are ever kept. So I think the more you start fussing with the rules of the convention and the less transparent it becomes how the Republican Party chooses a nominee, the more likely you are to lose the people who showed up as a protest vote and voted either for Trump or for Cruz. You're just going to affirm their worst fears, which is that nobody in the Republican Party who doesn't fit neatly into a Washington box has a voice in the Republican Party if you don't give the nomination to one of the two candidates who seem to seize their momentum.
Talking with Nick Zitzen, but what about this? What about the idea that if Cruz becomes the nominee, because he is a close second, that it's not Trump, and anybody that's not Trump, all of Trump's people, including Trump, will be screaming conspiracy, and it's unfair, and it was stolen from me anyway?
Well, you know Donald Trump will make that argument, right? I mean, if Donald Trump has a one delegate lead going into the convention and does not end up the nominee, I mean, we could have fun just predicting what his tweet would be.
Right.
You know he's going to make that argument. I think if Cruz really gets that close, Steve, I think that there's enough people who are behind Trump who could see themselves making a logical argument that it was a legitimate outcome. Where neither of them was the clear front runner going in, then there had to be some way to settle it. But if it's not close, if it's not, you know, if Trump has a 100 delegate lead, let's say, then I think it's going to be harder and harder to make the argument that the process was fair and transparent and that somebody else ended up with the nomination.
I remember having conversations with you on and off the air going back to 2008 about Senate and House leadership. The whole thing is just a hot mess. We talked about Merrick Garland with Senator Durbin. And you know how I feel about it. I've never signed on for the flush the incumbents movement, but isn't that where we're headed? Probably for both parties. Look at the mess in Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching Governor Rauner from a distance and trying to get a sense as to what's going on. I mean, the problem is, and you and I've talked about this so many times, there's just a lack of sobriety in the public's mood for what it takes to have a real public conversation. If you look at the depth that people go into vis-a-vis their fantasy sports teams, you know, the amount of detail that people can grasp and process and handle, there's just no interest in applying that same rigor to the complicated issues that people have to know about if you want to make an informed decision about who represents you and what kind of a forward direction we're going to take for the state, the city, the state, or the country. So people are angry on the one hand that they feel like the process has run away from them and that it's too complicated and it lacks transparency. But on the other hand, the reason that the political process has become so disingenuous is because that stuff works. Negative ads work. You know, big flashy distractions work. It moves public opinion polls. It wins elections. So there's really no easy answer to this, absent people realizing politics is an entertainment. It actually does have a really direct influence on the quality of your life. And the issues are complicated. So if you want to see a process that gets better, if you want to see more transparency, you actually have to hold the process to a higher standard by knowing more and being able to expect more out of the conversation.
At a time, again, and I know people get tired of the sermon, but at a time when you have less interest than ever in a system that you feel is so broken you can't change it, you have to be more involved than ever.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, look at Steve, the whole argument between Bernie Sanders and GE. Right. I mean, this is one of those examples where people got to dig in on this. I mean, Bernie Sanders has done, I think, a fairly good job.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Of getting people excited about points of view that he holds firm. And he's taken to the airwaves to attack GE, which is still America's largest industrial company, at a time where there aren't a lot of successful industrial companies in the U.S. I mean, that's the point of view people need to have for themselves. And you can't make a decision based only on listening to Bernie Sanders' point of view or reading Jeff Immelt, the CEO of GE's op-ed. Was it in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal? You
right.
actually have to listen to both sides of the argument, and you have to come up with a well-rounded point of view. And that's not easy to do. I'm not saying I think it's easy for people to follow the process. It's incredibly complicated. But the only solution is to do what you said.
I like Bernie Sanders. I can't get a thing done but I like him. I mean, you know, he's the I mentioned this before as well, I think. He's the uncle that comes up to you and goes, you know, I'm going to tell you something your parents won't tell you. You're a huge disappointment. Get off the couch. Go out and get a job. Stop mooching off your mother, for crying out loud.
When Romney won the governor's office in Massachusetts back in 2002, it was exactly the same way, right? Mitt Romney was the guy who could step up and say, you know what the problem with state government is? If you look at this line item here and you look at how we manage this agency and you look at how you do that, I mean, there was nothing sexy about it. And people were like, oh, okay. And Charlie Baker, who's the new governor up in Massachusetts, who sort of won on the same Bruce Rauner kind of competence campaign,
yeah.
He's got like 70% job approval ratings. There's nothing sexy about him. But he actually is just down to earth and honest about what it takes to do the job and what the real problems are.
How are things at SAP? You guys still struggling along?
Yeah. I'll tell you, the tech industry, oh, if there's anything more fast-paced than politics, I think it's tech. Every time you wake up, there's something that makes what you're currently carrying in your pocket obsolete. It's wild.
Well, they do amazing things every day in innovation at SAP, and they're in all of our lives, whether you're aware of it or not. So I salute you for having a great gig, but I'm still going to keep nagging you to run as well because I love your point of view. So my best to your family, and thanks for the kind words on Marilyn. Hopefully we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Steve. Happy Greek Easter to Andrea, too.
Yeah, same to you, Nick. Kalopaska.
Thanks.
Oh, Kalapaska to both of you. What did I say?
Happy Easter.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
It's 9:44. Our friend Aaron Katursky from ABC News joins us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning.
I love the fact that you are taking, even if it's a 20-minute break, away from the screaming ninnies of campaign 2016 to cover this story. All right, so as I understand it, you got a good-looking couple, and then there's an identity theft problem, and this somehow probably all takes place in Florida. Pick it up.
Well, I mean, naturally it takes place in Florida.
Right, right.
This is a woman named Patricia Perez Gonzalez and her boyfriend, Antonio Campagnoni, who were caught in Florida after prosecutors here in New York charged them with identity theft and grand larceny. According to federal agents with Homeland Security investigations, this is what they did. They lived it up, basically going to the high-end resorts, eating in the fanciest restaurants, traveling to New York and Hawaii and California, all on business class airfare. And they did it on someone else's dime. According to federal agents, they opened American Express cards in the names of 40 unsuspecting senior citizens, and then went on these luxury shopping sprees at all the fancy brands. They kept a lot of the stuff and lived in high style while they were doing it, but also sent a lot of the merchandise to South America where it was sold on the black market. So federal agents think this is part of a larger ring.
$2 million total?
$2 million is what they spent in other people's names, and so the credit is ruined for these 40 people who've been trying to resurrect themselves a little bit. And they themselves kept a handy log of their activities, posting all these photos on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. Patricia Perez Gonzalez fashions herself, I think, a bikini model, and is sometimes seen in shorts with her tush hanging out at a gas pump and on yachts.
Right.
And
me too, by the way.
Yeah. I've seen those pictures.
Yeah. And then he tried to get the image out of his head all weekend. Yeah. Aaron Katursky, ABC News. All right. So was the hook then the hot girl would entice the businessman and, you know, the movie of the week stuff?
I don't even know that it was that complicated or that there was that much enticing. And federal agents haven't yet spelled out how this all fits together. But what they do know is that there was all of this credit card fraud happening. They catch these two people who lived in Florida and somehow had ties to South America, and they think that this operation was fairly sophisticated. These two might not have been basically leaving a trail of all their bling on Twitter for everybody to see, but they believe that the nature of their fraud was fairly complex, and they found some evidence when they searched their apartment in Miami that they had plenty of resources to keep it going had they not been caught.
How'd they get caught again?
They got caught when I think American Express ended up alerting the feds to the fraud after some of their customers complained. And then it took them a while to follow the money and track these guys down. There are still more people out there, and so the investigation continues.
We were doing the story the other day, $6 billion in IRS tax fraud this time of year, all through ID theft.
It's a growing crime. In fact, prosecutors here in New York who are handling the case in the Manhattan DA's office said that this particular kind of credit card fraud tied to identity theft and then using chip-enabled cards that are, you know, at the very essence of trying to avoid identity theft is becoming increasingly common. So you got to protect yourself.
You know, what's funny about chip technology is other than Walgreens, Walmart, and other places that apparently start with Wal, most people are still on swipe. I mean, there's a hard equipment cost, I suppose, to getting to swipe technology.
And everybody's supposed to have it, by a certain time, but there have been some companies that have been slower than others. But soon enough, we'll all be using it. In this case, though, it didn't matter. These were chip-enabled cards. They just were opened in someone else's name. Right. And so someone else was footing the bill for these $2 million worth of Rolex watches and Chanel bags and all the rest of it.
I wish I could hang it on Florida, but it sounds like that could have happened anywhere.
It probably could. And these guys were just living in Florida. It's where they were caught. And what their specific ties to South America are and how they got involved in the ring, that we're not sure of.
Enjoy your weekend, my friend.
Thanks, Steve. You too.
Aaron Kotursky, ABC News. Update on market. Dow's up 125. NASDAQ up 33. So that's a pretty good Friday morning.
Very good Friday morning.
Bad.
Yep.
At 9:49, let's take a break and come back and talk about how old-time politicians used to curse, swear, and lie about each other as well. Peter King is a congressman from New York, and big deal. Peter King, you heard what Senator Durbin said about Ted Cruz. Peter King is a Republican. He's not much of a Cruz fan either. Listen.
Donald Trump, I had some real issues with him. On the other hand, I'm in no way am I comparing him to Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz, anyone in New York.
What if Ted Cruz is the nominee? Congressman King, what if Ted Cruz is the nominee? What do you do then?
I tell you, I don't know. I'll get some cyanide. I don't know what I'll do. I mean, I'll just,
Wow.
Speaking of Trump, as most of us usually do at this time or at sometime during the show, Donald Trump wants to end the EPA. Colbert on his show last night talked about it kind of. Listen.
Many people out there complain that Trump, you know, tends to talk big, but he never comes up with any specific proposals. Trump put that criticism to bed by finally giving Republican voters concrete examples of government agencies he would eliminate.
Would you eliminate any departments?
Oh, absolutely. Department of Environmental. I mean, the DEP is killing us. Environmentally, it's just killing our businesses.
Yes, absolutely. Trump promised to kill the wasteful Department of Environmental, the DEP. Even the abbreviation is wasteful because that P does not stand for anything. Now, we looked it up, and the Department of Environmental does not exist. Meaning, Trump is either talking out of his ass, or he's already eliminated it.
You think the welcome sign is up in Flint, Michigan?
It's just tremendous. So tremendous. Donald, write it down. Environmental Protection Agency.
See, Department of Environmental.
You see Rick Perry in Texas going, so I forgot one and I lost to this guy?
Right.
Oh. Tremendous. You should thank the people that you were out emceeing for last night.
Yeah, we want to thank the first tee of Greater Chicagoland area, Lisa Quinn and everybody who put that event together. Mary was a model. I emceed the event. We had a great turnout, great crowd, and it's such a great cause. Some of the little kids were out there.
They were so cute. They were wearing Johnny O dresses.
Yes, they were great, and they were modeling the new golf gloves.
Yeah, it holds a little tee. It was really cute.
Come in multiple colors, so you can get a purple one for Dave, or you can get a bright orange one, whatever color you want.
Andrea did a great job.
Orange, it goes with my complexion.
Yes.
Since I'm using the Trump spray tan.
Right.
We got a couple of texters from earlier that started off our he made it worse situation. So let's give them something off the Big Bad prize sheet, including Apt gift cards online at aptabt.com and a ChevyDriveChicago.com and WGN Radio stainless steel travel mug and a bag of Papa Nicholas coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer.